The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism. In a moment, I'll be giving a Dharma talk or Teisho, and a reminder that in our Zen practice, we sit in our Zazen posture for the entire Teisho, just letting the words come to us within our practice, through and into our practice. So today I'm going to look into and explore a koan from the Blue Cliff Record, a collection of 100 stories that were put together in the 13th century. And this one is case 53. It goes like this. One day, Bai Zhang accompanied Matsu on a walk. A flock of wild ducks flew past them. Matsu said, "What's that?" Bai Zhang said, "Wild ducks?" Matsu said, "Where'd they go?" Bai Zhang said, "They flew away." Matsu then twisted Bai Zhang's nose so hard that he cried out. Matsu said, "So you say they've flown away." So this is a well-known case. It occurred to me to offer it, and the other teachers agreed when we were looking through our koan collections, trying to figure out what to talk about, partly because one of you had talked to me about it one day. And then the other day, I was walking with a friend along a brook that leads to a pond near where I live. And my friend suddenly said, "What's that?" And I didn't see or hear anything, but she pointed. And probably about 20 feet away from us, there were two ducks, a male and a female duck. And except for the male's green head, they were invisible. They blended in with all of the shrubbery, greenery of the early spring. And she had heard one of them flap her, I believe, wings, the female duck. And we were just transfixed for a moment, and then we went on our way talking about something else. But the image of those ducks, almost invisible, really stayed with me. And I thought about this koan, which is to me a very difficult koan to understand. It's important to know who these people are who are talking to each other. One of them is the great Zen teacher Matsu, great Zen master Ma, who was the lineage ancestor of Linji and considered one of the founders of the Linji school. Of course, it was Linji who founded the Linji school, but a few generations before, Ma had a number of Dharma heirs, and he's revered as one of the great ancestors, and Linji certainly revered him. And he lived in about the 8th century. Bai Zhang was one of his many students, but in this case, in this story, he was his attendant. He was younger by about, I think, 20 years. And he actually was with Zen Master Ma for many, many years, training with him when this incident occurred with the wild ducks. And then a number of years later, one source says about 10 or 11 years later, he had a second encounter with his teacher Ma that opened his heart fully. One of the interesting things to me about this koan is that last line about the wild ducks flying away. Apparently, Zen Master Ma was one of the first Zen teachers in China who used physical rebukes with his students. So in this story, he twists his student's nose. He twists his Jisha's nose, and the pain makes him cry out. Baijiang cries out. In one translation, it says that he stifled a cry. It was so painful, but he didn't want to say anything out loud. But all the other translations, and I found about six or seven, say that he cried out in pain. And then that final comment of Ma about the ducks not having really flown away. It's translated, all of the different sources I found translated that line differently. Sometimes it's translated as a question, sometimes as a statement. In our koan collection, translated by John Tarrant, that line is why it didn't fly away after all. But in another translation, so you say they've flown away, the one I just read to you. Another translation says, when have they ever flown away? And I could go on this back and forth. Did they fly away? What's this flying away? What the line is intended to do is to make us wonder, which is what all koans do ultimately. They make us wonder about the nature of reality, the nature of perceiving. Master Ma was famous for saying, this very mind is the Buddha. And then later, no mind, no Buddha. And this back and forth even comes up in this koan, the back and forth of Ma saying, what is that? And of course, our hero of the story, the person that we can identify with, the young student, Baijiang, says, well, it's wild ducks. It's sort of like a duh answer. You know, why are you asking me this question? They're just wild ducks. And then the story goes on. Ma keeps challenging Baijiang. Yuan Wu, who collected and commented on these 100 cases in the Blue Cliff Record, calls his first answer conventional reality, the conventional truth. Because after all, aren't things the way they are? Isn't this moment the way it is here in New England, a cool, overcast day? Isn't just that enough to understand? In one of the pieces we read during the liturgy service, we read something from Ma, from Matsu. He says, do not lean toward either purity or impurity. For each matter you encounter constitutes the meaning of your existence. If that's true, then do wild ducks constitute the meaning of Baijiang's existence? Does everything we encounter constitute the meaning of our existence? What the heck does that mean? What is that pointing to? What is the meaning? They're just wild ducks, the conventional truth. Things are as they are. This very mind is Buddha. But then, remember, Ma's teaching flips over. It flips over into no mind, no Buddha. Don't be fooled by apparent circumstances. In the conventional truth mode, Matsu asks him, testing him, to see if Baijiang actually has more insight than he's letting on by pointing to the wild ducks. He must have sensed something that was missing. In Yuan Wu's commentary on this koan in the Blue Cliff Record, he first says that it's Matsu who's mistaken. Why isn't he satisfied with the answer, wild ducks? There must be something he's doing to agitate the student. Yuan Wu says, Matsu is making waves where there's no wind, a common expression in Zen to mean, stop messing around, just let things be as they are. Why are you fixated on some narrative that has caught your mind? Why are you fixated on ordinary reality? Why are you fixated on anything but the ongoing movement of reality? A bird sings, and then we mess with it. We make waves where there's no wind. But it's just to tweet, to tweet, to tweet. It's nothing more than that. And yet it is everything. Because if we really hear what is offered to us by the universe, our hearts completely open into what we conventionally call awakening or enlightenment. People have all kinds of romantic notions about enlightenment, about awakening, Kensho, Satori, whatever you want to call it. Realization is a wonderful way of talking about it because we realize something. Just the tweet, 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 just the flying away. And somehow Ma didn't believe that Baijiang really was feeling the completeness of those ducks. And so said, where did they go? A loving, really testing question for his beloved student. Is it just this, or is there more to it? Well, there is more to it. They flew away. There's a way of looking at this part of the dialogue as, again, just this, just the way it is. Everything is exactly the way it is. Why bother messing with it in any way? But then Ma does mess with it. He twists his student's nose in a very painful way that makes him perhaps cry out with his pain. And then there's this line, why, it didn't fly away after all. So you've seen them fly away. When was this flown away? One of the earliest translations into English by R.D.M. Shaw of this line was, did it indeed fly away? Why, it's been here the whole time. I'm sure he added that second line himself to make it more clear. It's been here the whole time, though, is what Ma was hoping that Baijiang would realize. Now, a very interesting thing happens at this point in the story. It seems like the end of it. Twisted nose, they've never flown away. Where have they gone? However you want to understand it. In the lamp records, which are the records of the teachers, mostly from the Tang Dynasty in China, and in Yuan Wu's own commentary on this koan, something happens in that moment when Baijiang is feeling the pain of his twisted nose and the phrase, where have they gone? Where did they fly away? What is this? Pay attention. What is going on? Don't be in conventional reality, however you want to understand it. He has a realization. This is not in the koan itself. And I think that's probably a good thing because so many stories like this end with that line. But Yuan Wu doesn't want us to linger on the realization. He wants us to linger on, where have they gone? Where have they gone? What just happened? Show me your mind, the mind that says there's this and there's that. There's near and there's far. There's wild ducks and there's wild ducks flown away. And there's the wild ducks that just appeared by naming them in our own minds. Saying he had realization at that point may lead us astray. Talking about realization, talking about some goal we have for our practice, as we talked about last night, maybe we want to have samadhi, maybe we want to have some state that we have fallen in love with, because when it arises, we go, oh, this must be it. But let me read you the rest of the story as it's recorded in the lamp records, because it's instructive. It's instructive about how to live our lives. To not stick with anything as the truth, but to keep staying awake as much as possible to the coming and going of not just external, so-called external things like ducks, but the coming and going of what happens in our hearts and minds and bodies. This is the instruction of the great masters of the Tang Dynasty, to go inward, to not be stuck with observing things outside of us. But as Dogen later says, Dogen, who lived about the same time as this collection was put together, take the backward step. Everything you need to know, even Shakyamuni Buddha said this, is in this very body, right here. The mind, the heart beating, the blood flowing, the breath coming in and out, the hearing of the bird, the seeing of the ducks, all of it is here. And also, if you make that into an idea, then you miss it. It's not here, and it's not here, as Dogen might say. So the story goes on. Upon hearing these words, Baijiang realized. And then he returned to his room, sobbing. Now, sometimes we get a taste of this kind of experience. Just sitting down in Zazen can sometimes make me feel like sobbing. Just hearing the sound of a bird or feeling the impossibility of being a human being with all of our loss and illness and aging and death, the impossibility of ever understanding these teachings. I don't even know the reason for it, but sometimes tears just come. And when the tears come, we're asked to recognize them as awakened phenomena. Everything is awakened phenomena, not just some special state that we give a name. Everything, without exception. So crying, of course, Baijiang's tears at this point are a demonstration of his awakening. Who knows what he was thinking, although we do get to see a little bit later what he might have been thinking. So one of the other attendants came to Baijiang when he heard him crying, and he said, "Are you okay? Are you homesick? What's going on?" Trying to understand these tears. And Baijiang said, no. The attendant said, "Did somebody yell at you?" "Nope." "Well, then why are you crying?" And Baijiang said, "Well, Master Ma just twisted my nose so hard that the pain was unbearable." And there we go. Now he's given a conventional truth answer. But we know there's more going on than this. We just know this because of what happens later, and because of who Baijiang became later in his life, the great master Baijiang, who is famous, at least in our Zen community, for encountering one day an old man who turned out to be a fox in another story. Baijiang, who really began the seeds of our modern Zen practice by saying that practice wasn't just sitting, but it also involved cultivating food to eat. And he created a system of the precepts. He borrowed from original Buddhism and came up with 16 precepts to follow so that life in activity was valued by Baijiang as much as life in silence and stillness. One of our very great revered ancestors who taught us what we're teaching now, the way that things can become so clear to us that we see that every state we enter, confused, sad, in pain, is the awakened heart manifesting itself. Every step we take, every dish we wash, every argument we have, every idea we have that things aren't right, all of it to be held with open arms. That's Baijiang's contribution here, a great Dharma heir of his teacher, Matsu. So the attendant said, Well, what could you have possibly done to have offended Ma so that he would twist your nose? And Baijiang said, you should go ask him about it. This is one of my favorite little tropes in these stories. Not answering, but saying, somebody else might be able to tell you this. Go ask. It's a wonderful way of keeping people engaged. Well, I can't tell you, but go ahead and ask somebody else. So he goes to the teacher, the attendant, and he says, what did the attendant, Baijiang, do to offend you? He's in his room crying. Please tell me. And Ma says, Baijiang knows what it is. Go back and ask him. So I love this guy. We don't know his name. He's just so sincere and curious, and he goes back and forth and back and forth. And this back and forth is a very important part of the koan, because we go back and forth. Sometimes we're sitting and everything drops away, and we just see and hear and feel clearly. Don't we love that state? And then sometimes we're lost in confusion and dullness and fog and anger and fear. And we don't love those states, but they're just as important. This crying that Baijiang is engaged in, fully, fully, fully in it. And that's what Zen asks of us. It's not what everybody wants. It's not popular. And don't believe me when I say this, but this is the direct path to being awake in this life. Everything that arises being recognized as the teachings of the Tathagata, the one who comes and goes. That was what the Buddha called himself. So the attendant, this very sincere person, goes back to Baijiang's room and says to him, the master says that you already know, so I should come here and ask you. And at that, Baijiang started laughing, and he couldn't stop laughing. The attendant says, wait a minute, a moment ago you were crying, so why are you laughing now? Baijiang said, my crying a moment ago is the same as my laughing now. If you understand Baijiang's meaning when he says that, then you're beginning to get a glimpse of what it could be like to live an awakened life. The crying and the laughing, just two sides of one coin, we might say. The anger and the fear and the joy and the happiness, all manifestations of the Buddha Dharma, all Dharma gates, all ways to enter. The attendant, however, was bewildered. Then the next day, Matsu, the teacher, went into the hall to address the monks. And just when everybody got there, Baijiang picked up his cushions and walked out. Matsu got up himself and followed Baijiang, who had gone into Matsu's room. Matsu said to him, just now I hadn't said anything. Why did you pick up your cushions and leave and come into my room? Baijiang said, yesterday you painfully twisted my nose. Matsu said, is there anything special about yesterday that you've noticed? Baijiang said, today, my nose doesn't hurt anymore. And Matsu said, then you really understand what happened yesterday. And Baijiang then bowed and went out. Even though the lamp records say he had an awakening at that point, he studied with his teacher for many, many years, as I said earlier, and he had another experience where things dropped away and became completely clear to him. His spirit is like the spirit of his fellow student who kept going back and forth to ask his questions, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on. He didn't say that he'd attained anything, because really there's nothing to attain, is there? There's just realizing what is already here and has been here the whole time. Yuan Wu says about these two fellows, though they seem radiant and spiritual, nevertheless, they don't remain in radiance and spirituality. They know that that's only part of the picture. Yuan Wu says, Baijiang cried out in pain. And if you see it that way, then the whole world does not hide it, and it is perfectly manifest everywhere. Thus it is said, penetrate one place, and you penetrate 1,000 places, 10,000 places, all at once. What we're doing here in this session is a rare occurrence in the lives of human beings, to devote yourself to just one thing. Sitting upright and unmoving, sitting in quiet. And then, this is the great thing about the distant temple bell session, as we mentioned last night, and then going out into the world, whether it's your home, the walls of your home, or whether it's outside, finding the way, as all of the characters in this story found, to go back and forth and back and forth and see that what's happening at this moment is everything, not just this little tiny moment of time and space. Everything arises now through this one lens. One day, Baijiang accompanied Matsu on a walk. A flock of wild ducks flew past them. Matsu said, what's that? Baijiang said, wild ducks. Matsu said, where'd they go? Baijiang said, they flew away. Matsu then twisted Baijiang's nose so hard that he cried out. Matsu said, so, you say they've flown away. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable. We're going to have our Dharma dialogue now. Please raise your Zoom hand when you have something to offer or something to ask. It could be about this koan, could be about anything that's coming up for you. And let's start with Jenny.
Thank you, Melissa. Yeah, I just have a reaction to this. Just like, wow, we're walking here beside the lake and you just reached out and hurt me intentionally on purpose. and just anger. And I know it's hard to see the grandmotherly kindness in it. It's somehow it's like more shocking than they get, you know, they hit them with a stick or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there is a debate about these stories. apparently, they've been hard to verify exactly what happened. And there was a revival of Zen in China, I believe, in the 18th century, of two schools, and one believed in hitting and shouting and tweaking noses, and they did that, and another viewed it more metaphorically. And the one that did the hitting and shouting did not go so far. It didn't go so well when human beings treat each other this way. And yet, Jenny, you, like all of us, have had our nose tweaked by people, and sometimes, you know, it seems intentional. Right? Someone says something in a meeting that hits you the wrong way. And, you know, how dare you do that? And why did you intend to do that? And that moment when life seems to reach out and hit us, You know, we stub our toe and it's like the chair jumped out to jump in our way. Why did you do that? And so that there is that moment of reactivity. And so this is partly about that moment of reactivity and valuing it. And I so appreciate you bringing it up. This is not like, oh, thank you for that nice teaching. This is like, what? Right?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, so this is part of the energy that we're encouraged to have and to stay around to see what it really is.
And it's also, it's such an important point, because the anger that arises, even just hearing the story, is a Dharma gate. You know, don't think, I shouldn't be angry about this. Allow that anger to be fully there. Yuan Wu talks about all the stories in his commentary on this koan, all the stories about people who stubbed their toe or you know, turned and saw flowering bush, or the shock of the moment is what's important. But the shock of your own reactivity to the story is also very valuable. And hold it close. Don't say, well, let me talk myself out of it. I shouldn't be angry. Let the anger be your Dharma gate. Madhu.
Thank you for your talk, Melissa Roche. Your talk was so loaded with information for me. Like, I could really not unravel the thread. Like, you know, like, I was like, oh, where is this going? It's everything is so related. Like, oh my gosh. It was like that for me. But where, you know, it just makes me really wonder, you know, what is this realization that's being talked about in all these koans? Like, it really makes me very curious. And when I think this is realization probably, and that gets taken away, you know, and that goes away, and then this might be realization and that too goes away, then, you know, it's like completely groundless. But it just makes me really curious, like, what's that?
Good. Yeah, I think, you know, the not being able to follow all the, because the story just goes, it just goes back and forth. It's sort of like my experience of my life, you know, oh, everything's going along and whammo, right? And sometimes I get angry, like Jenny said, or sometimes I get hurt or whatever it is, or, right? And then the question of what realization is, every time you make up a definition, it takes you further away from it. So it's good to be curious and not know. That's the heart of our practice in a way. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madhu. And you know, Michael, you're there too. If you ever want to comment, just let us know. It's going to be hard, I think. So maybe not for now. Anyway, Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. It was a great talk. My immediate reaction was I found myself wondering, well, I wonder if Baizong had said something flowery and spiritual, he really would have got struck again, because and Matsu would have said, it's just birds flying away.
Yes, totally. That's right. I agree.
Yeah, I think one of the traps of these koans, or the trap of Zen, is we think there's some way to avoid getting our nose tweaked, right? If only I say the right thing in Doksan, then I'll get my merit badge and everything will be fine. But maybe it is this this back and forth and getting used to this groundless feeling and responding in the moment wholeheartedly. And then responding in the next moment wholeheartedly. Nothing that can be accomplished here. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you,
Bob. Thanks, Bob. Lara.
So thank you for the talk. During the talk, I was having tremendous kind of pain in my feet. And I had this like experience of both this pain in my feet. And I was so like delighted by listening. It was like so many, I kind of experienced it similar to Madhu, but differently. Like it felt like all these seeds, like when you blow like the seeds in the air, and they were just floating everywhere, and all this pain in my feet. So this kind of feeling of both, I really like this to keep going, and this would be okay if it stops so my feet can switch. But then the feeling now where there is no pain in my feet.
Right. That's just like Baijiang, right? You know, and that understanding, I love that. One of my first realizations, I would call it, you know, not a Kensho or anything like that, but a realization when I was first sitting with my first teacher, and we sat for longer than we sit. We sat for 35 minutes, and sometimes he would give Dharma talks that were 45 minutes to an hour, and he asked people not to move. And you know, that I can just finish the talk, for God's sake, and or ring the bell. And then I would get up and I wasn't in pain anymore. And that back and forth, that thing that we're so sure, and this is true for everything. I've seen it over the years. I'm so sure that things are always going to be like this, especially if they're terrible. And if they're wonderful, I hope they're always going to be like this. And it's never been that way. You know, this is a lot. We didn't talk about this. Maybe David and Michael will be talking about this. Koan too. Maybe Pierce too. This is also about impermanence. Yesterday, my nose hurt. And today, I'm fine. Yesterday, I was crying. Now I'm laughing. Here, there it is again. Yeah. And to not grasp on to something. I think you understand. Thank you. Esther.
Thank you so much for the talk, Melissa. Sometimes what happens after a Dharma talk, and when I have the opportunity to listen to others, is that something else starts to happen, and the story in the Dharma talk continues through the words and just through the sensations that I'm experiencing. And so right now, I have a similar experience to Madhu during the talk. And it kind of feels like a ducks were flying around my head and flapping their wings at my head, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the ducks that you were describing that were hiding in the green shrubbery, was that the word you used?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Kind of looking at the ducks you were talking about in all these different words. But what really first struck me was this delusive certainty that we can have sometimes. And, you know, right now what's actualizing in my life is looking at something that I thought was a certain way until this point. And now not sure if it has changed or not changed, and looking at it. And so this image of the ducks have not flown away. Still here, yet they may have flown away. And this tension that we're kind of held in Zen, that we don't really know. How can we know? Did they fly? Did they not fly? Were they ducks?
I think we move into this mystery and this wondering. And part of the cost of entry is to lose, to be disoriented, to be disturbed. We humans crave a certain kind of certainty that is actually delusive. It is imaginary. We think we know. And these moments of when it shapeshifts, I thought I knew who you were. I thought I knew who I was, right? And I think our practice is practicing staying in that moment when part of us is hurt, is angry, wants to, assemble the mud ball once more, but to allow it to break apart, to allow ourselves to break apart and see what happens.
Yeah, and I think it's also this, this surrender that happens when we give up. Mm. And there's intimacy and actually almost a comfort.
Yeah.
Diving into not knowing. This is actually how it may be.
You know, there often is a comfort, but also I think, you know, most of us know this in-between place is almost unbearable. And my first teacher used to say that when you're in that space, you know, to be able to bear it is really important. Sometimes you can really feel dizzy when things are going from one place to another and you just want it to settle already. You know, that's one of my, I want it to be clear, stop being foggy. I just want it to be like this. And I remember one of these things at a retreat, I got really, really dizzy. And, you know, he said, see the doctor after the retreat, but for now, just hang out with the dizziness. And it went away. You know, something settled again the next time I did Zazen. So these weird states, who said that? You have to be able to tolerate weird states.
Right. My teacher, George Bowman.
George Bowman, right.
If you want to follow the path of Zen, you have to be willing to tolerate weird mind states.
And body states.
Yeah.
It just sometimes it hasn't settled down yet. And then it'll only settle down for a while. And then it's so sweet. And then something else will happen. Someone will twist your nose or send you an angry email or whatever. Right. That'll happen. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anne L.
Hi. Yeah. During our at-home practice period. Oh, thank you for the talk, though. I was thinking of things in my past and how, unfortunately, things that were painful or insulting or stay with you. I can remember not being invited to a party when I was like 7 years old. I don't remember all the parties I was invited to. I remember that one. And how if you hurt someone, even unintentionally, you may be causing something that will stay with them for a very long time. You forget about it. You say, oh, sorry, and just keep going. But often they don't forget about it, which makes you think that the twisting the nose theory of Zen really works better than grandmotherly.
Right, than the kindness and the they're there. Let me just show you. They call that form of teaching peeling the lychee nut and putting it in your mouth. And yeah, we don't remember those as well as we remember the hits. Yeah, I love that. There's something around what I understand about the neurology of the brain, that to protect us from harm, we do remember negative things more so that we can learn and avoid situations that are dangerous. But in Zen, Zen is dangerous. And all of you have decided not to avoid it. I'm amazed.
And I do think, Anne, I totally agree with you, those moments stay with us, and we have the opportunity to work on them. So now that you're slightly more mature than you were at 7, you may be able to work with it in a different way. But I do think that we have to cultivate the skill of remembering beauty and remembering those moments there, because there's so many moments where it's actually fine. And there's no problem, but we go, you know, our mind goes, what's the next problem? Or what was the last problem? And so in some ways to tolerate these moments of ease and to appreciate them, not as the in-between of the two dramatic stories that we're really caught up in, but as the fullness of the moment, maybe quite quiet and spectacularly unspectacular, just this little thing. Yeah, thank you.
Matt.
It's hard to maintain what was in one's mind when I listen to a story like this and my mind goes to, okay, what should he have said? What would the right thing have been? What should I have done? What would I, you know, like this, like, oh, there's something, there's a test here. He screwed up. Oh, what should it have been? You know, and when something that was said in this dialogue kind of brought up this, like, no, it's just, he just got his nose twisted. His nose got twisted. It's all just what happens, you know. It's just like, it's all just what happens, and maybe you're gonna choke on the lychee nut. I don't know, you know. I mean, it's like you just, I don't know. So I'm in a state of befuddlement, and that's feels okay.
Yeah. Well, quit bragging. No. Just so appreciating what you're saying, and referring back to what Bob had said about, you know, this is what our mind does, and especially those of us who have been good students, we think that somehow we can get 100 on the test, and we have an idea of what 100% looks like, or what awakening looks like, and often it's avoiding the nose being tweaked. And yet again and again, we go back to the first noble truth. Discomfort, suffering are unavoidable. There is no pure life except the very life we're living. And this possibility of noticing all the avoidance strategies. I just don't want to feel uncomfortable. I just don't want to be, you know, whatever. And we turn toward that and we notice that. And I love as you're presenting this as kind of, I sense that you're just resting in the befuddlement, right? Really valuing, this is not the place you have to escape from. This is the entry point, right here. Yeah.
And you know, I hadn't thought of this before, but all of these comments are making me realize that the energy for practice comes from states like befuddlement, curiosity. I don't get it. I'm confused. I'm lost. I just got hit. There's something that arises that, you know, otherwise, why would we bother? And to really, this is why there are Dharma gates. This is why befuddlement is a Dharma gate, and why curiosity arises, like Madhu is saying. It's a very important part of practice to be thrown off your cushion regularly. Which we are, right? We can't avoid it. Thanks. Susan.
Thanks for the talk, Melissa. I had a lot of fun listening to the storyline of the talk. So there were moments really where I was laughing loudly. And I was so curious to hear what is next, what is next, what is next. So thank you for this. And so these days I study a bit deeper the precepts, and as well in this talk, the fourth precept was coming up for me quite often, and as well in my daily life. So these not knowing, giving up fixed ideas about myself and the world. Mm. I have the feeling in my daily life, I could write books about my fixed ideas about myself and the world constantly. And as well, following the storyline of the talk. So there were always these ideas, what is next? And these, I don't want to call it state, but really these not knowing feel sometimes very risky and uncomfortable, and I don't want to be in that place. I want to know.
Yes.
Yeah. And on the other hand, what a boundless refuge.
Yeah, well, you said that so beautifully. To me, that's the heart. We're learning to bear. I talked about this in a talk on Tuesday. We're learning to bear these difficult mind-heart states, right? And that's what we're practicing. When we sit still and don't move, we're learning to bear whatever's here. And then we go out into our lives and we recognize how much we don't want to bear it. And what you know, that I want to know things, to be in the not knowing place and give up those fixed ideas is not easy. You can't just press a button and have it happen. First, there's the in-between, you know, the dizzy place where it's just, what is this? I don't like it. I don't like it. Make it go away. Make it go away. Well, it's like, this is what's happening. Then we start to narrate it to ourselves. And that's the real dangerous part. And as you say, you're really seeing that. You're really noticing that place that we all get into. And then we don't have to get rid of those stories and ideas. They begin to lose their energy. And you know, this particular story, it's sometimes called a shaggy dog story in English, which is a story that just keeps going and going and going and going. There's some famous joke about a shaggy dog. I don't even know it. Or they're like fairy tales. You know, in fairy tales, this happens. The hero sets out or the heroine sets out, and then you have no idea what's going to happen. The best ones really shake you up. You know, there's a lot of violence in the Grimm Brothers fairy tales. And in the 20th century in America, they were all retold to avoid the violence, like in Cinderella. Cinderella cuts off the feet, or her sisters cut off their feet to get into their slippers. You know, it's like, no, that didn't happen. Everything is lovely and sweet and beautiful. But life isn't lovely and sweet and beautiful all the time. Although, as David points out, it has its moments that we keep forgetting that are lovely and sweet and beautiful. So to watch the story making apparatus in our own minds, to see it really clearly and go, oh yeah, there it goes. And then to bear that, to sit with that, that's hard. You understand? Thank you. Yeah, so if there isn't anyone else who has a comment, I think we'll end and come back into Zazen just for a moment, because I believe the next thing that happens is that Corwin will lead us into Kinin.